Hello, welcome to the third episode of The Dragon's Pen, a podcast about fantasy writing, sci-fi writing, and other genre-specific writing. My name is Martin, I'm a fantasy writer myself, and I have spent years attending and leading workshops, working with aspiring writers to help them understand how to improve their texts. I thought I might share my experience and give you some advice on how to develop your world, build your stories and characters, and help you write your own fantasy or sci-fi saga. Let's get to it. The topic of this episode is The Lion, The Witch, and the world-building story conflict. What is world-building story conflict? I tend to come up with my own names for stuff and theories I would like to explain. So for now, let's just say it's a thing I'm going to talk about for next 20 minutes. World-building is a ton of fun. You can literally come up with a fantastic sci-fi or a fantasy world while having drinks with your friends. And you can have a good time doing it too. It gives you an amazing creative freedom. You can master the entire universe. You want to include a culture of Vikings on spaceships? Well, you can. There's nobody to really stop you. It is your world. I spent weeks of fun building the world for my first fantasy novel. I am sure you did too. And I'm sure building your own world and filling out the missing pieces was way more fun than coming up with stuff like, what should my characters do during a week-long travel to the nearest city on my map? Drawing a map is super fun as well. There are websites that allow you to create an amazing-looking map of your world in like 15 minutes with no artistic knowledge at all. There are world map generators that can provide you with boring stuff like topography and river systems, and you can just populate your world with the fantastic races, dynasties, magical places, and amazing histories. The whole process is freeing and relaxing and full of creating overflow, and it is awesome, and I hate it. Okay, I don't hate world building. I hate that it's so much fun. There is no pressure. It is much less overwhelming than writing itself. And that causes a lot of issues, especially for aspiring writers. It is very easy to get lost in the fun of world building and kind of forget about more important stuff like, let's say, plot development. And that is what I call world-building story conflict. The imbalance that stems from putting too much work into one over another one. Mostly putting too much work into world-building over the plot. Let me try to explain using an example. In the first episode of my podcast, I use an example of Alex, Brianna, and the Kingdom of Ran, the ancient evil that arises in the mountains at the very edge of the kingdom, right next to the village of Alex and Brianna. We can stick with that. The story begins with Alex being born with a mysterious tattoo, not knowing his parents, and surviving an attack on his home village, along with his teenage crush Brianna. Let's do a bit of world building here. Trust me, it's gonna be fun. Okay, so let's start with the Kingdom of Ran. It is mostly a human kingdom, let's say, built upon an ancient civilization of humans that sailed from across the sea. They, let's say, encountered a more advanced race of elves that lived in the area, and after learning a bit more about the elven civilization, they started to build their own, kinda connected civilization. They elected the first leader of the new human elf culture, a wise elfin king named, Miril. Okay, good enough. The elves kept to the forests and lived off the land, but humans wanted to industrialize a bit, so they come up with villages and cities, and they wanted and needed raw materials like ore and metal. Those were abandoned in the nearby mountains, but elves warned humans not to enter, not really explaining why, just saying that evil lurks in those mountains. But humans discovered there's a quality ore in the mountains, iron, copper, silver, and gold. They pleaded with the High King, Myril, to allow mining, but he refused. Disappointed that the Elven King is keeping riches from them, a new faction of humans arose, let's say the Golden Fist, named after marking their gloves with traces of the precious metal they found in the mountains. Okay, so the Golden Fist grew quickly. A rebellious faction quickly became its own thing, you know, establishing structure, electing, let's say, Grandmaster, building mines and bigger and better industrialized cities. So, okay, let's say the elves tried to stop them and did anything they could short of starting an open civil war. And the Golden Fist took it as elves trying to make humans poor and less developed than themselves. And so the hatred for elves festered among the ranks of the Golden Fist. And then the miners soon started to disappear, and the mines were being destroyed mysteriously. And the Grandmaster took it as acts of war from the elves. And then the inevitable civil war came. The civilization living off the land was no match for much better equipped Golden Fist. In the heat and chaos of the war, ancient evil from the mountains arose, but it was already too late, and the mistrust and war broke the people and elves apart into small factions or small enclaves, trying to fend for themselves and just trying to survive in the world at war. Unity between the High King, Myril, and Grandmaster of the Golden Fist was impossible. There was no united armies standing against evil. But the High King and the Grandmaster tried one more desperate act, combining what little of their strengths they had left, infusing half-elven warriors with powerful elven magic, providing them with the best equipment ever created. Only a small number of warriors were trained this way and made into, this needs a dramatic name, so let's say, Choice Makers. Yeah, Choice Makers were able to defeat the evil, but the kingdom was lost. From what was left of the Golden Fist, a new kingdom arose, and since the most elves were either slain or fled, there was no actual elven dynasty to save. Thus, the Kingdom of Ran was built, and the Choice Makers were never really celebrated, and were quickly forgotten. A few of those who survived looked for a normal life, started families, became farmers and hunters. The half-elves become more and more human with each next generation, and the only thing that is left from their ancient lineage is a mysterious tattoo and an ability to wield ancient elven magic. As evil gained strength, its spies searched the land for descendants of Choicemakers, killing them off. They found Alex's parents, but they could not find baby Alex hidden by his mother. He was found and taken by a foster family, teaching him how to hunt. And let's say his home village is built at the foot of the mountains, right next to it. And the village built most of its economy around hunting dangerous creatures crawling out of the caves deep in the mountains. And Alex's foster father hunts, let's say, basilisks, and sells raw basilisk materials for profit, you know, to alchemists, mages, whatever. It's a tough and very dangerous job, but it provides much needed money. Okay, that was fun. I can probably continue like this for the rest of the episode. Probably fill in, you know, tiny little details, create an entire dynasty of the High King and the Grandmaster. Maybe the High King himself fathered the first half-elves as he married a human wife for, let's say, political reasons, and so on and so forth. There would be only a tiny little issue with this. What the hell does this has to do with the story of an adolescent Alex? I mean, sure, he is descendant of Choicemakers, he is equipped to stop the evil in the mountains. it makes sense to build his story around him becoming a choice maker and facing evil. But all this provides me with just the beginning, a little bit of the outline of the story and the end. Now, another question. Where should I put all this in my story? Should I put it at the very beginning, a sort of a intro, a prologue, maybe build a scene around it, explain to the reader the ins and outs of my world? A lot of aspiring authors do just that. But, you know, what for? Does the lesson in history of my world help my readers to understand the struggles of my hero? Especially in the beginning, when Alex is just Alex, not Alex the Choicemaker, but Alex, a teenage orphan with a mysterious tattoo. He feels different, sure, but, you know, does he feel different because of the tattoo or because he's an orphan? How does his foster family treat him? Is he loved? Is he, you know, shunned, pushed away? You know, I spent a lot of time creating the history of Alex, yet it did not provide me with any answers on what his childhood was like or who he really is. It provides me with an idea of who Alex should be eventually. This right here is world-building story conflict. It feels like I did a lot of work on my story, but I actually did almost nothing that could help me. Okay. Maybe I can push the whole explanation a little bit further into the story. You know, just save the history lesson of the Kingdom of Ran for later and focus on Alex and his childhood at first. But, you know, does Alex need to know the name of the first Elven King to become a hero of his saga? Let me ask you this way. Do you remember the name of the High King of Elves? You probably don't, because there was no need for you to, you know, connect with it in any way. Plus, I still don't know what the ancient evil actually is. So what is Alex gonna fight in the story? You know, dragons? Orcs? Who knows? All of this does absolutely nothing to provide me with the answers on what is going to happen to Alex and his teenage crush Brianna when they escape their village being destroyed by this ancient evil. I might also have an idea of what city will they visit next. I might have come up with a name, the basic idea of the city layout, and the economy, but, you know, again, what good is any of that? If I have no idea what Alex and Brianna are gonna do, what they will think and how they will feel in this city, and how are they gonna develop as a characters in this story? The problem is, world building is easy and relaxing, at least on a very high level. So easy and so relaxing, in fact, everyone can do it, and everyone will. So why should I, as a reader, read about history of your non-existing world when I can create my own world and I can create it so it better fits to my own liking? The answer is because of the story, because of the characters I follow and I meet in this world of yours. All of your world-building efforts falls flat and falls apart without powerful story to present it properly. Think of your favorite sci-fi or fantasy works. What makes you remember, let's say, Rivendell as a calm sanctuary? Is it the fact that it just exists? Or is it because the Fellowship of the Ring was born there? And is it because you got to meet Arwen and have Frodo and the gang enjoy some well-deserved R&R after a horrible trip? And, you know, let's say, what about Shire or Lothlorien or Minas Tirith? All of these wonderful places and all of these wonderful pieces of world building were intertwined with the story in a particular way and in a particular order. They were not just parts of the world, they were part of the story as well. Think about the order in which we visit these places. The Shire, calm and playful, and, you know, there's a little bit of mystery with Gandalf arriving and, you know, learning about the ring. Then we have Old Forest, dramatic, horrific. Then Tom Bombadil's house, you know, is calm and it's mysterious. The Barrow Downs are scary and mystical. The Bree is new, exciting, and afterwards a little bit dramatic. Amon Sul is very dramatic, very scary and full of action. And then Rivendell is calming and hopeful and, you know, filled with this idea that the world is filled with other races and other civilizations that come together. And if you think about it, the order is not random. It follows very strict rules of mounting tension and switching between action and calm and discovery. So what good is creating Rivendell if you're not sending your heroes in there to kind of, you know, roam around? If you're not providing readers with something to do in this fantastic location. Same goes for Kingdom of Ran. If you want the history of the Choicemakers to be a good piece of world building, you need to make it an essential part of your story. Do I really need to create an entire map of the Kingdom of Ran? Why? What for? Because it looks good in a book, because I saw it in The Lord of the Rings. To make your story work, you actually need only a tiny bit of your map. You know, imagine Skyrim if you played it. Imagine, or any other RPG, really. Imagine instead of doing all the little quests everywhere and discovering the map, you only follow the main quest. So how would your world map look? It would be just black nothingness all around with tiny paths leading between main quest locations discovered. And that's pretty much all the world building you really need to create a good story. Nothing more, just a little paths that lead your characters across your world from one place of interest to another. Now, I'm not saying, you know, to abandon world building altogether. It is still a very good creative exercise. It is relaxing, it is playful, and it can provide you with a lot of inspiration for your story. You just have to kind of dig in a little bit. Let's go back to our example. There is an outline of the story and it's kind of hidden there. So rather than dumping the history of the Kingdom of Ran on my reader up front, I can make the history part of the actual story. Okay, so humans arrive, learn from the elves, build a kingdom, elect a high king of with some name. Then there is a conflict in the mountains with ore, and humans want it, elves want humans not to want it, and there's miscommunication, war, and choice makers, and, you know, ancient evil, and finally Alex is hunting basilisks. So let's dig in and find the story there. Okay, so Alex hunting basilisks from early childhood for a living is kind of obvious, you know? It provides him with a unique skill set that can help him fend off the attacks of his village and help save Brianna. Maybe the first attack can come from basilisks themselves, right? Maybe ones that are corrupted by the evil in some way. The conflict between elves and humans is also kind of obvious and provides me with the good kind of framework for my story. You know, living off the land against greed and technological advancement hurting the land. Okay, so we have kind of a main conflict here. Ecology against technology. This can provide us with some situations for Alex that he has to face to develop himself as a character. Maybe he ends up, let's say, in a logging camp that is being attacked by wild creatures. So, following the main conflict of our story, who is Alex going to side with? And why? Humans want to cut trees, creatures want to live in peace. Alex can learn a little bit more about the power of ancient earth magic as well, let's say. And plus, we present a reader with our main conflict. Humans destroying the land, land trying to kind of protect itself. Okay, what else was there? Okay, the Golden Fist, you know, racism. Okay, let's say Alex can be saved by a group of knights that seem righteous and heroic, but they end up being a bunch of racists and they hunt elves in the woods like animals, you know, making fun of it, making it sport, skinning them, you know, horrible stuff. again, we are kind of hammering down on our main conflict. So what's going to happen with Alex? How he's going to react? Let's say he's invited to join, but he refuses. Then the Righteous Knights discover they have a little bit of elven blood in him. So what do they do? Do they try to kill him? Or maybe use him as bait to hunt more elves? All of this will help Alex understand his place between industry-oriented humans and nature-dwelling elves. It will help him grow into the hero we want him to be, you know, the descendant of choicemakers. Or maybe make him a new industrial nature-hating antagonist, both of which make for an entertaining story. So I can use all that to hammer in my idea for the main conflict. I can use it to make Alex grow and to kind of help him understand who he is as a character and help him develop himself into the hero I want him to be at the end of the saga. Plus, I am providing my readers with an understandable view of my conflict of nature and industry and allow them to see my world and the history of my world in kind of a action intertwined way that is not just a dump of information up front. It kind of unwinds with the story. And I can pretty much use every single bit of world building I already have, and I can use it to kind of reinforce the story of Alex. I don't need to know anything else about the world to make my story work, really. The story I am looking for is kind of already there in the world I have already built. I just need to look for it and make it work within the context of Alex. So how do you resolve your world-building story conflict? How do you balance it? Well, you don't. You just put the story first. That's how. The entirety of your world is useless unless you have a story to tell it. The world-building without a story is just, you know, you relaxing with the notebook and map generator. The story without the world-building is still a story. Not a fantasy or a sci-fi one, but still a story. Plainly put, the purpose of your fantastic world is to serve the story you want to tell, not the other way around. If I was to tell a story about the power of family, I would create a world that kind of match the idea, you know, or at least part of the world that would truly reinforce the story I want to tell, with, let's say, race of monsters that are driven off right after being born away from the parents, and that makes them bitter and evil, and this act actually makes them the monster. Let's say there is a magical creature that can be either good or evil, you know, let's say a griffin. If it's brought up by the parents, it becomes a good griffin. If it is, you know, driven off right after birth, it becomes an evil griffin and it can become an enemy of my hero. And let's say I will have in this world mages that need to have a sibling present to cast any spell and stuff like that. So if they are alone, they are pretty much useless. So next time you open your notes on your fantastic world, rather than adding a bunch of new stuff, you can look at it through the scope of your story. How can you make your world reflect and reinforce ideas in your story? How can you make it an essential part of your story? How can you make your world drive in the point of what you are trying to say? You'll have just as much fun coming up with this. I mean, it is still world building, but now, instead of just filling the map, you are building towards something, towards a fantastic story. Thank you for listening.